So today we're going to be talking about impasse in this crisis time, right? And it's pretty interesting for me to do this topic because I'm married to a super empath, right? If you don't believe me, she's a woman that can watch SpongeBob and freak out when somebody gets hurt on SpongeBob, right? or whatever. But, you know, I like to say empathetic tendencies, you know, that can creep out at times. But we're going to talk a little bit about that and what's going on with everybody right now and what's happening. So I'd like to welcome everybody. I know we'll have people coming in and out during the thing. And I apologize, I didn't set this up, so it would have just been easier to get in. I have to admit people, so if you'll see me clicking around doing things. But also Zoom is constantly changing what they're doing to make things safer. So they're doing more where you have to admit people in or put in a password. And when I was setting this up, I obviously forgot how to do the one with the password. But that's another class that I sell on, like, how to do this, but it's making me keep up on it. But today we're going to be talking about impasse in times of crisis. And again, my contact info, my main website is NFNLP, National Federation of Neurolinguistic Programming.com. I'm Dr. Will at RealNLP on Twitter, if you're into that. Instagram is Dr. Will Horton. Facebook, I forget what my Facebook, just Google me. I know I'll come up on Facebook. So it's just something to think about if you want to follow or keep in touch. That's also how you get in touch with me. But let's just jump in and do this. So is this you, right? Because if you're empathetic, in times of crisis, you have a tendency to feel exhausted, overwhelmed, depressed. But the other side is you're emotionally volatile. You'll blow up at the drop of a hat, right? Because you're overwhelmed. And you may experience other health problems, right? Because you have a feeling of responsibilities for other people's happiness and everything that they're going through, right? Sorry, I got to click around. However, research supports that impasse is between 1% and 2% of the population. But from what I understand, that number is vastly underreported. Right? Because again, what's your metrics on measuring it? How did you do the research? Things like that. But of course, most of the people in my world of therapy, NLP, hypnosis, and even in my other world of acting and that side has a tendency to draw a higher representation of people that are empathetic. Because if you're empathetic, it makes you better at certain things. And we'll talk about that. So, but if that's you, right now, people are just exhausted, you're overwhelmed, or you're emotionally volatile. And so these are normal things that are going on. And what, you know, we use our traditional NLP of the triage that's constantly going on. The internal representational systems, you know, will affect your external behavior. External behavior will affect your internal state. And it becomes a cycle that we're constantly going through, right? You change your internal state, it'll change your external behavior and internal representation. We're constantly going through this. I mean, this is what people do. If you change your state, you feel better. Throw your shoulders back, throw your head up, jump around, do some things. You know, as we were getting started, Miss Lisa was talking about doing a gratitude list in the morning, and that changes your internal state and your external representation, internal representations, because it flips your mind into a different thing. So this is going on. The only difference is with someone that's truly empathetic, other people's external behavior affects your internal state. When you see someone depressed, it makes you depressed. You try to bring them out of it. You overly feel. So if you struggle to differentiate between your own body feelings and other people's, that means you're empathetic. Now, generally, empaths have a huge reserve of strength and stamina. Right? It's just seems to be the people that are empathetic. So they usually can go years giving, you know, their energy, their stuff to other people. But usually it catches up with them over time, especially if they don't have time to down-regulate, You know, if you're empathetic and you're constantly giving other people, you're a therapist, you're a doctor, you're, it happens with our kids. If you're overly empathetic with your kids, that's why, you know, sometimes, you know, currently how many people tell them that, right now people are experiencing where the parents need mommy time or daddy time, right? They need some downtime away from their kids. You know, I have a few friends going through this now. So it can catch up with you over time. Now what's happening right now, because of the constant onslaught of all this stuff, the crisis point is hitting faster for everyone, right? And so, you know, this is what we're going to do, right? But an empath is much more perceptive, intuitive, you know, with the emotional currents of the world and society at large, right? So what's going on in society at large will affect us no matter what. Even if you don't have anybody around you, you're picking up on the vibe of the world. Now, there are certain careers, again, as we said, that draw empathetics at a higher number. All the artists, actors, singers, writers, directors, they all get in there, right? If you're really empathetic, you're drawn to the arts. With the exception of producers, they're usually dicks. I'm sorry, that was for my acting friends, right? But usually they're, you know, you're empathetic because that's what acting is. You're feeling feelings. You're trying to emote feelings. You pick up on the feelings of the group, things like that. What's interesting, lawyers are highly empathetic when they first get involved into the field. And we'll talk about what happens with lawyers generally. But a lawyer, you know, a lot of people go into law because they want to change society. They're gonna help the underdog. You're going to do whatever it is, right? So lawyers, social workers, that's a highly empathetic field, especially when they're first getting started. Healthcare in general, of course, hospice work, charity work. Now, what happens if you're empathetic and you don't moderate some of these tendencies, you have a tendency to burn out, right? And again, this one's so true that people that are empathetic, empaths, are sensitive to even like TV, like videos, movies, news, broadcasts, you know, they get upset because especially if they watch something that's violent or, you know, some kind of shocking scene, it impacts them. You know, they'll be brought to tears. They can't get into it. They struggle to comprehend the cruelty. My wife is like this. I'll self-disclose about her. I hope she doesn't get mad, you know, because of some of my other parts of my background. I'll watch movies, you know, or TV shows, and she goes, I can't watch this, and she'll leave, right? Because it really bothers her, you know, it'll, you know. And so it's just what it is. That's the first level of it, right? Now, what happens is some fields train the empathetic tendencies out of people, or at least teach you how to limit them, right? We talked about this earlier, on my NLP group about, you know, taking your NLP business online, how lawyers, you know, again, they're drawn into the field because they want social change. They're going to be the next JFK. They're going to do the whatever it is. Great. You know, I'm going to go save the underclad or the underrepresented people. Well, the first thing they do in law school is, sometimes they find out what your true beliefs are. You know, what's something you really believe in your core? You're pro-life or you're pro-choice. They'll make you argue the other side, right? And you have to be, you know, if you tank it, you could get in trouble in law school, right? And what begins to happen, as Albert pointed out, it's called cognitive dissonance. When you're having conflicting beliefs and activities, what begins to happen, you begin to moderate your beliefs, especially if you have to do the behavior because it's necessary. You know, it's like there was that study where if I can get you to change your mind or even just argue that you change your mind because I gave you, I think it's $1 or $10, most people have a tendency to change their beliefs, right? So it's just kind of interesting. Right, but law beats it out of you that way because that's why you always hear lawyers say, well, they'll talk about one thing and then they'll talk about, but on the other hand, right? And of course, you know, here in the States, something like 80% of our congressmen are lawyers. So they'll constantly do both sides of a talk, you know? It's just what happens. Medicine and psychology and somewhat social work, through the training, they teach you what we call, obviously, clinical detachment. Right? You can't be, it's rotated out of you in the training. Right? Now what happens for most of us is I'm not meaning this in any bad way, lay community, hypnotist, NLPers, certain of the like coaching and things like that, we're not taught how to have clinical detachment, you know? And I always default to something I know, like in the addiction world, even in the 12-step world, which is just, you know, people going to 12-step meetings, you see people that are in it for a while, they get some of that clinical detachment, right? And it's kind of given in the language of the group. They're getting it, as we would say, covertly in the NLP and the hypnosis world, as opposed to medicine and psych, we're just taught clinical detachment. But in the addiction world, what they begin to, you know, you hear it with things like, you carry the message, not the alcoholic, right? You can't help someone get something if they don't want it. You can't want the outcome more than they do, right? And we always see that with young hypnotists and NLPers and lay therapists or coaches. They want the outcome so bad for their client, the client doesn't do any of the homework, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so this is why it's easier to get burned out, right? And I know, like, I'll self-disclose in one of my clinical rotations, I had to work with pedophiles. That was a big stretch for me. I'll be honest. There's a lot of history in there for other issues in my life. But it's like, how do you clinically detach and work with a subgroup that it caused me to pull back and look at things differently, right? And again, like, you know, when they're talking about with what's going on right now, and of course the media with what I call fear porn, excuse my language, but I think that's a lot of what they're doing is fear, you know, just bombing us with it. But they kept putting this. Now, if you listen to the language they're talking about, when they were saying about, like, oh my God, what's going to happen if we run out of ventilators? And let's say you have, you know, 8 people that need a ventilator and you only have 6 ventilators. Oh my God, how are they going to make this decision? You know, would you, and they do it. I don't know if they're cognitively aware of it. They'll say, how would you make that decision? Well, you're not the medical doctor on the scene. I got several friends that are medical doctors and they go, well, that's what you learn when you're doing triage work. You know, it's just, you know, and it's just what happens. You could argue whether it's right or wrong. They're making decisions based on what's going on right then, right in front of them. And they'll do it pretty detachedly. It's not that they might not have feelings later. It's just, it's what it is. But what happens, the core of this is we feel responsible for other people's happiness and well-being, right? And taken to the extreme, of course, it becomes codependency, which is, you know, empaths have a tendency to be codependent on other people. Empaths are also drawn to narcissists for some reason, right? But we feel other people's feelings as a default way of functioning ourselves, right? And usually we feel so much, so intensely, and then you can't disengage. That's what happens, and that's why I think, because, and right now we're going through a period of special where it's a constant onslaught of what's going on. And so one of the things we have to do if you're going to work with empaths or you're empathetic is realize they always think they can and should do more. You know, when someone has that, they should do more. You do as much as you can, but in the back of your head, you're thinking, I could have done more. I could have done more. If I'd have done just a little bit more, they would have sobered up. If I'd have done a little bit more, they would have got whatever goal they were going after. And so what happens then, we get the guilt and shame of not doing enough, whatever enough is, right? And how many of us are taught to know our limits, right? And to realize that perfection is the enemy of good enough. Yeah. And generally, where I don't think, at least in my case, most people aren't taught how to set personal boundaries. And if there's one thing I would wish that the hypnosis and NLP community on the lay side could develop in their training, and I try to do it, is having that a personal boundary built in. Right? And to do that, you have to accept that some people are going to hurt. Some people aren't going to get the goal that they're going after because they, that you can't get that for them, you know? And I think a lot of us that are parents learn this in the back way when we want kids, we want something for our kids more than they want it, right? And then when they don't get it, it's like, well, whatever, you know? It's kind of interesting, right? And one of my favorite sayings, as a lot of people know, is, I feel your pain. Let me help you. My Bill Clinton, feel your pain. But with empaths, they're often not in their own body. Yeah. You spend so much time getting into the feelings of others, it's hard to disassociate, you know, because you have a tendency to leave your own body and kind of go into other people's feelings, right? And that leads to one of the big things that happens. You don't know what you should be feeling. Why is it in our culture we're taught we should know what we should feel, especially in a situation you've never been in? And then some people, it's like, I don't know what I should be feeling right now. And that's going on with the whole culture right now with the lockdown and the, you know, whatever's going on. It's like, should I be angry? You know, should I be happy? You know, the media is telling me I should just be happy. I should just hunker down and be happy, right? And what if I don't? And I'll just say, the only thing I'll say is, what if I actually worry about things like the constitutional rights that are ingrained in the Constitution that gives you certain inalienable rights? But I'm not supposed to feel that way. So I'll disassociate and I'll take what they're saying. So you have to know it's okay to feel what you feel, and it's okay for other people to feel the opposite. Right? So to do that, you have to bring awareness into your body. Right? And I heard that being an empath is like having a tattoo. Mm-hmm. Even if we remove it, there's still an imprint in your skin. Maybe slight, but there's an imprint. Right? And so that tendency is always in there. I use the addiction analogy where if you have the genetic predisposition for an addiction, you may not have a drink, a drug, food, sugar, whatever your addiction is, watch porn, whatever it is, for decades, but the tendency is still there, right? So you have to be, in the addiction world, they say constantly vigilant, and it's the same for empaths that are doing it, right? And so we'll talk about what you can do, but I thought about this the other day. I had to go get some food for the bird, right? So I had to go to the pet store, right? And so I'm walking in, and I'm pretty good at disengaging from certain things, but I come strolling in, I get the big thing of macaw food, right? And I go walking up to get in line. There was a couple of people in line. Of course, they had the 6-foot distance, which is interesting in a closed air system, but they had their 6-foot distance. But there was a lady there. She had on a mask, goggles, like what you'd see in an operating room, a hoodie, and double gloves, right? Well, she had the clear goggles, and I could see the terror in her eyes, you know? And it was abject terror. It was not fear. It was abject terror. I've seen that a few times in my life in certain situations, right? And it was. And I, you know, and I go to get in line, and she liked that abject terror in her eyes. You know, and for Albert, as an actor, I'm like, gosh, if I could just memorize how that looks in the eyes, right? But anyway, she had it. And so like I step in line, she like started to step back and then realized the other person was there. So she really had nowhere to go. But I started to step into her fear, right? It was my natural tendency. And then I wanted to console her. But honestly, in that situation, she was inconsolable. Right? Yes, I have a wonderful skill set with NLP and hypnosis, and I might have been able to do some magic. But was that, would that be the time or the place? Right? Would that be the time or the place? And I would get so pulled into it, it would drive me batshit crazy. Mm-hmm. Right? And, you know, the first thing you're taught in leadership training in the military is you have to maintain making decisions based on everybody. Right? There's a reason. As we all know, if we're on an airplane, what do they always say? You know, when they do the stuff, put your own mask on first, then put it on other people. I guarantee you, 98% of the people, if something bad happens, especially you got your kids there, your spouse or something, 98% will still default to try to put the mask on the other person. Right? It's just what, maybe not 98, I'm doing the typical make numbers up. A high percentage would do it. You know, I'd love to see a study done on that, right? But, you know, it's just what's going to happen, right? So I had to make that choice. I mean, I felt, you know, I felt her pain, and then I had to make the cognitive choice to pull back because I had other stuff I needed to get done that day, right? And she didn't ask for help. You know, and there's nothing worse than, you know, trying to help somebody who doesn't want help. So how can you, so what's an impasse to do in a time of crisis? Somebody asked about recording it. I'll make the recording available to anybody that wants it. Okay. So what's an empath to do, right? What's an empath to do? Well, first, you learn to have to manage these gifts because it is a gift. If you're empathetic, it makes you a better therapist. It makes you a better actor, makes you a better singer. Have you ever seen a really good singer sing? They're in those emotions, right? But again, you have to learn to develop a way to navigate this empathetic process, you know? Actors, when you're in an acting class, especially people in like a Meisner kind of acting where you really get into the feeling or method acting, right? They talk about being able to disengage or develop an off switch, right? So how do you do that if we're not taught? If you're naturally empathetic, it's just there. So how do you develop that off switch? Unless you go through a clinical training, go through a military training, which kind of beats out a lot of empathy, things like that. So, one of the easiest ways is to constantly remind yourself that being a good person doesn't require you to feel other people's feelings. You can acknowledge them, you can understand them, but you don't have to feel them, right? If you don't, and you're mentor people in hypnosis and NLP, I talk about that because I go, if you don't, you will not be in this field over 2 to 3 years. It will burn you out, right? And the clinical place where you see that the most is with alcohol and drug counselors. People that sober up and become an alcohol and drug counselor, unless they go through some real clinical training, they only last 24 to 36 months. Because they're so empathetic on helping other people, after a while they just can't stand it. And you have to get a switch in your head to recognize when you're depleting your batteries. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you need that switch? You go, I need to step back. I need to step back. Hold on, somebody. Okay, somebody ask a question. I'll take questions at the end, if that's okay. Okay. So you need to develop that off switch and know when you're becoming depleted, right? And take as much time as you need to recharge, right? And you have to practice pulling back that energy, right? Most people will never notice, by the way, but we think they will, right? And then you need to align and balance yourself. And we'll do a little thing where you practice focusing on your sixth chakra, the third eye, right? you can still feel compassion, but provide a safe distance rather than step into it with your heart, you know? And this is where you hear some people say you got to lead with your head, not your heart, right? Mm. Right. And especially if you got a lot of experience, you can lead with your head, your heart's, you're keeping your heart space for you, right? And I hope that makes sense to everybody. So you don't actually absorb those other people's energies. And if anybody wants this PowerPoint, email me. I'll get you the PowerPoint too. In case you want to do your own presentation on it, right? So
generous.
So you need to learn to moderate it, right? It's like some addictions you can do and never do again, alcohol, drugs, smoking, certain things you could do. But if you have other addictions like food, right, you have to learn to moderate it, right? And so it can be done. But you also have to realize that the empathetic feeling itself can become addictive, right? Because it gives us insight. It makes us better therapists, better actors, better writers, better doctors, right? So we have that. So we can become almost addicted to the feeling we get when we're empathetic, right? Which, you know, and if you don't channel it, right, it can become more pain than pleasure, right? And so, you know, if you look at addictions, I always default to addiction. We learn how our brain, why things become addictive, right? And it has to do with the reward center of the brain. So if you think about it, if you're empathetic, what's the reward that you get for being empathetic? Like I said, it might make you a better therapist, hypnotist, actor, right? Which if you keep it in one specific area, it would be fine. You know, if you're empathetic when you're just doing your work, that would be fine. But if it begins to carry over into everything else, and again, like I said, you're at the grocery store and you see everybody freaking out and you step into it,
mm-hmm.
right? And again, that's because dopamine is the driver for pleasure, and you get somewhat of a dopamine rush because you're empathetic and you're helping other people, and you get that, ooh, and they like it, so it feels good, right? And it's a pleasurable thing, right? And then your frontal cortex, where motivation is, you like that. There's a positive motivation for doing it. Makes you, like I said, makes you better at what you do, right? And the other one, sometimes athletes are very empathetic when they can really, you know, they get into the feeling of the game, things like that. And then our prefrontal cortex is where we put the brakes on the problem, you know, the highest level of the brain. The problem is it's not a very good brake. And if you're by the time that kicks in, you've already started that reward much like addiction, you know, you've already started that obsession compulsion about doing the addiction. That part's already started. So when your higher part of your brain kicks in and said, don't do this, it's already started. Right. And so we have to learn how to grasp this and moderate it, right? So your choice is you have to be prepared to prevent empathy overload. Develop those switches, develop the things, know that it's going on. And right now, because of what's going on in the world, it's a constant overload, right? And then they want to make you feel guilty if you're not feeling everybody else's pain, right? And again, for those of us in the hypnosis and the NLP world, I still say really just partially step back and listen to the language of terror, you know, and it's just kind of, it's just weird, but be prepared to change your own empathy overload. And the easiest is to develop an off switch. So we'll do a visualization in a moment, but let's open it up for questions. I just wanted to put this out there. So. Okay. Ooh, somebody has a question. Excuse me. Oh, someone wants to make a donation. Praise Jesus. I'm passing the plate. Praise Jesus. Wait, do you believe in God? I got to do my, sorry. That's for my NLP people. So does anybody have a question? I didn't turn it off. I think everyone, you can unmute yourself if you choose to. I didn't force mute everybody. Does anybody have a specific question about anything? And I admit this is all, we're all learning this together, because the last time we saw this much overwhelming terror from a society was probably here in the States anyway, was September 11th, 2001.
Yeah.
So we haven't seen it that much. Yes, we had the financial meltdown, but that was a slower rollout, by the way. Just like this, one of the issues is it was so quick, right? It was so quick. So it was a shock to the system. And the sixth chakra is the third eye. If you're not into chakras, you could just look that up. Somebody asked that question. And it's, we'll do the meditation. I don't want to do a chakra training. That's too much work. Okay. Oh, somebody said, Gina, why don't you unmute yourself? Is she on there? Okay.
Hey, Dr. Will.
Hey, how are you?
Good. You hit the nail on the head. I felt like...
Whoop. You just went muted again.
No, I said I felt like you were reading my mind or my thoughts based on everything I was feeling the last few weeks, even the couple weeks or so leading up to all this before the U.S. really found out how bad it was. I was feeling really weird, but it's good stuff. Thank you. I just want to know what I've been really working on is how can you really develop that off switch, you know? that's just really what I'd like to know, or any advice on that.
Yeah, we'll do that. When we do our little shielding visualization, we'll talk about putting in an off switch, right? And because if you don't, it could start to destroy friendships and relationships and all kinds of stuff with other people. So,
Especially if people are being just negative nonstop and it comes at you through a message, a text message you weren't expecting, or, you know, it'll happen immediately. And you have to be able to block it in some way. And it's hard when it's coming from someone you love.
Oh, yeah.
Out, so to speak, you know, but it's for your own good.
Yeah, and yeah, it's yeah it's like the meme, you know, I had to learn to pull back and not get involved in certain things. You know, people don't appreciate it when you post something like, just get in the coffin, it's all over. You know, anyway, So does anybody have a question? Because then we'll do the relax. We'll do a visualization and a process that I like, that I think might help. Cool. Oh, yes, Miss Carrie.
Yes, I was just wondering your thoughts about saging. Like from time to time, saging yourself or saging your home, or does it, because they say that that has real positive attributes.
Well, the metaphysical person in me says yes. Then the psychologist in me goes, well, even if it's the placebo effect, it works, right? Because sure. Okay. Right now we've got people convincing themselves into death, you know? So. You know, because again, like the placebo, if you overdose on a placebo, do you only think you're dead? Or you might actually die. I mean, you know, so, you know, and of course, the other thing to remember about one reason we want to do this is, what's the number one way to compromise your immune system? Put yourself under high levels of stress 24/7.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so. So yeah, so let's, Lisa, you got something?
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to share this. I'm working with a girl who's 15 and she has like psychic abilities and all these things. And like the more she says to me, the more she convinces me that she has this or whatever. But it was interesting because the other day she said to me, they're telling me to tell you that you really need to go outside and put your feet like in the ground and on the grass after every session right now to put the energy back in the ground. And it was so cute because she's like, you're going to think I'm crazy and blah, blah, blah. But, and I'm like, okay, so I'm listening. I'm doing it.
Ground. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and like, and just know your limitations. Right. And that you know, someone I know, you know, they decided that they're making their spouse do all the grocery shopping. They just can't go to the store. It just, they pick up on all the fear of everybody around them, you know? And then you see the abject anger, right? When I was the other day, I was at the store and, you know, the only thing that my fear underneath the fear is eventually somebody's going to get shot for breaking the 6-foot rule. They came too close to me, so I shot them.
Oh, God.
You know, it's like, oh, my God, what's going to happen? You know, and I was at the grocery store and I'm walking down the aisle. Somebody starts yelling at somebody for getting too close. You know? So anyway, that's so, yeah. So let's do an exercise. Let me turn this off. Okay. So here's what we're going to do. So everyone just take a nice deep breath and relax for a moment. And what I'd like you to do is realize that whatever you're feeling is perfectly normal and natural, because no one taught us what to expect in a national crisis, right? And even those of us that were taught somewhat crisis management on how to handle crisis situations, we weren't taught how to process the feelings when there's nothing we can do to do what we need to do. So what I want you to do is we're going to work on developing a shield and let your subconscious mind know that it's okay, that we're going to, it's to protect you from the negative, stressful, toxic, intrusive, bad energy that many people have right now. And again, it's not that we don't like or care or want to help other people. It's just that we're going to have to put our own mask on first, like we're on an airplane. And so what I'd like you to do is take a nice deep breath. And one way to do this is realize that everything that we're doing is for your own good. And again, give yourself the permission to feel what you feel, the anger, the fear, the confusion, all of that. And one way to do this is I'd like you to imagine looking in a mirror. And if you were looking in a mirror and you saw yourself today, just the way you are right now, that's nothing but a snapshot in time. It's how you look right now. You know that's not how you looked 6 weeks ago before all this happened. Maybe you look a little more tired. You have circles under your eyes. Maybe you put on a couple pounds. Maybe you lost a couple pounds. It's nothing but a snapshot in time. And you realize 6 weeks from now or 6 months from now, you'll look in the mirror and you'll be a different person, because everything will change. And so what I'd like you to do is imagine looking at yourself as you are right now and look through that picture like we'd see if we were looking through a mirror, one of those two-way mirrors that you see on movies. And on the other side of the image of you today, you see that you behind the scenes learning a new skill that maybe you wish you would have learned when you were a kid. And you see that you there take a few long, deep breaths. And with each breath that you take and every beat of your heart, you begin to imagine a beautiful light enveloping you, surrounding you physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. It might be white light. It might be pink. It could be gold. Maybe it's a combination. But with every breath that you take and every beat of your heart, this beautiful light comes down. And maybe it's a light from the universe. Maybe it's a light from God. But it just envelops every cell, every part of you. And it's there to protect you from all the negative, stressful, toxic, intrusive, bad feelings out there. And within it, you know that within this shield, you can feel centered, happy, energized, and focused. Because it's only blocking out the negativity, the anger, the fear. But at the same time, it's allowing positive and loving things to drift through. And yet at the same time, that you see through the glass as developing this, has the ability to let other people feel what they need to feel. Because maybe they have to go through whatever they have to go through. You know, they always say there's 5 stages of grief or acceptance. And wherever that person is, anger, denial, bargaining, they're where they are. And you can look at it with love and empathy. And so what I'd like you to do is now as you're looking through this image of you in the mirror, it's almost like you see yourself learning this ability, surrounding yourself with that beautiful white light. And it's like you take this ability into other places in your future. Maybe you have to go to the store or go out into public, or you're somewhere and the news is on. You can just shield yourself from all the negativity. Whenever you're uncomfortable with a person, place, thing, situation, it's easy for that shield to instantly kick in. Because what I'd like to imagine is imagine sitting, you see that you there learning this. And somewhere in that image behind that mirror, you see someone who loves you unconditionally. Could be someone from your past, parent, grandparent, maybe they're not even around anymore. Could be a religious icon, Jesus or Buddha. But they love you unconditionally. Could even be a pet. But they're looking at you with love and empathy. And you realize you can feel empathetic feelings and still be safe and secure. That you can process it. And that you there, you begin to see you developing that third eye, right there by your, between your eyebrows, where you can see things for what they truly are. Starting now for the rest of your life, you see things in their true perspective without magnifying them, without stepping into them too much, just analyzing and taking what you need and leaving the rest. Realizing that by putting on your own mask, if you will, you're able to help other people put their masks on. Because as you come in contact with your capacity inborn in you to choose out of all that you have at this moment, that which fits you well, you know there are things which you can add to yourself, including a little switch in your head. And it might be just taking a few deep breaths and surrounding yourself with that whatever light color you like, white, pink, gold, blue, whatever color it is for you. And it activates that third eye. So you process things through a higher level of intelligence. And you protect your heart space. That's right. And so by doing all of that now, you'll be surprised and delighted at how easy this is. And how all of these things begin to make changes. And it doesn't have to make sense consciously. It just is. And as this you, behind the scenes in this mirror, takes on more power, more strength, more focus, it actually changes the image that you see of yourself. Because now as you look in the mirror, you see that you can be empathetic and caring and loving, but still take care of yourself. That's right. Good. So put all this into your heart. Put all of this into your heart and allow it to be there. There you go. Good. And now I'm going to count from 1 to 5. And you're going to come back feeling that feeling of self-love and self-appreciation. The same way that you, that person or place or thing that loves you unconditionally, you feel some of that love and appreciation for yourself. And bring it into your heart. And know that this switch you can work on later today. And now I'm going to count from 1 to 5. 1, coming on up. 2, drifting to the surface. 3, wide awake, clear-headed, and refreshed. 4, opening your eyes. And 5, open your eyes. Come on back. All right. Okay. Well, that was a little exercise. I hope everybody liked it. Again, there's my contact info if people want to keep in touch with me. I'll post this recording on Facebook. It'll go out in my e-zine. If you're not on my e-zine, go to nfnlp.com and sign up for my e-zine. I'll put it on YouTube. You feel free to post it wherever you want. That's really it. See, somebody had something. Hold on 1 second. Okay, people are saying thank you. All right. So keep in touch. Let me know what's going on. I will post this later today. It'll go up on Facebook and wherever else people want it. Feel free to get it. If you want this PowerPoint so you can kind of tweak it, make it yours, let me know. I'll share with you the PowerPoint. I'll send you the PowerPoint so you can make your own version, because each person has their own thing. Some of you, you know, are into different things. Cool. All right. So that's it. I'd like to thank everybody. Stay safe, stay happy, stay motivated. And, my only thing I will say is, whenever you see anything, question everything. Question everything, right? Because to me, nothing's as it seems, right? So so everybody, keep in touch. I'll send out, again, just shoot me an email, shoot me a message, and I will get the PowerPoint to you if you want it, so you can tweak it and do it yourself and have some fun with this. Everybody, have a great day. And where's my ending? See you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. See everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.